Welcome to Justice on Trial. I am Jeremy Dean QC. I have practiced as a criminal defence barrister since 1983, defending in all types of criminal case. This series of podcasts puts the spotlight on the criminal justice system. I will be speaking to government, lawyers, former prisoners, family members, and campaigners, amongst others. I will also be scrutinising the impact of coronavirus, especially upon those who are locked up, as the rest of us are locked down. The criminal justice process is a cornerstone of our free society. Together, let's take a close look at it, its strengths and weaknesses, and whether it serves its purpose. This is Justice on Trial. The spotlight is on the impact of COVID-19, and in particular, so far as this episode is concerned, prison conditions and the implications for prisoners during the currency of COVID-19, coronavirus. I'm pleased to welcome two guests to the programme who will go by the names of Tina and Alan. Alan has recently been detained in a London prison and will tell us of his experience, especially over recent days.
I was telling them like every 2 seconds that like, I physically can't breathe. I've got like asthma and asphyxiation problems. Like I physically can't breathe in the cell. Like, I was even at one point, I was even gonna do something to myself or do something to like a guard just so they'd put me in a segregation thing. The segregation had better conditions than the cell I was in. Like.
Were you scared?
Yeah, probably like the most stressful time like, of my life, to be honest. At one point, I was gonna like snap a razor and make a blade and just start cutting up my arm, so they had to take me hospital. And because in the hospital, I'd like at least they do something there. Because in the hospital, I could have asked them, like, oh, I could have told the people there and they'd probably like try help or something. And obviously, it wouldn't be like boiling hot, I'd breathe properly. So I was considering doing that, basically.
But I'm going to begin with his aunt, Tina.
Nobody came and spoke to him and said, Alan, we understand that you're just 19 years old. You can't have visits. You can't have a phone in your cell. And he frankly wanted to end it all. And, you know, he just felt lost and wanted to die.
Tina, can you just very briefly tell us about yourself? You're Alan's aunt, is that right?
I am Alan's aunt and godmother. I'm his primary carer.
And I think it's fair to say, without going into the detail, that Alan comes from a pretty difficult background. Would you agree?
He had a troubled childhood, a binge-drinking mother whom escalated into alcoholism, and a very critical and unpleasant father. I was with him all the way. I mistakenly took my foot off the pedal as soon as he reached 18. I do believe a person is not fully adult till they're 21.
And Alan got himself into trouble when he was 18 years old, is that right?
He was 1 month into his 19th birthday.
And as a consequence of that, for the last few months, Alan has been in custody in a London jail. Is that right?
Correct, on remand.
On remand. And indeed, he still awaits trial.
Correct.
And obviously I'm going to be speaking to Alan himself shortly, but he was granted bail a couple of days ago and I think he's now living with you pending his trial. What can you tell us about prison before the corona period, so far as Alan is concerned? I mean, what's your impression of an 18-year-old from a very difficult background being remanded in custody?
I think it was most traumatic. I particularly disliked the fact that remand prisoners were mixed with convicted prisoners, and it was rather the convicted with the unconvicted, and it was a lucky dip who he would share a cell with. I think as the coronavirus hit, He was moved to A Wing, which is a Victorian dungeon cell, in appalling conditions, and his health deteriorated severely to the point he was calling me with suicide attempts. He was in possession of a knife, and he did originally refuse bail. He accepted that he would have to serve some time locked up for his foolish and immature actions. He was there for many months.
Yeah, when you say he refused bail, was an application actually made, or did he decide that it would be better for him to serve time on remand?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
You were telling us about coronavirus and the implications. When coronavirus started to invade us, was there an effect on visits and phone calls?
It was particularly distressing as he had been abruptly moved from the so-called induction wing to A wing, which is much more severe, in accommodation with a window blocked, no table and chairs, no access to a telephone. So the fact that he couldn't speak on the phone was really what upset him. Visits were abruptly cancelled.
So were you effectively cut off from Alan altogether?
I was cut off from Alan, yes, I was.
And when you mentioned the possibility of suicide, I mean, how did you become aware, if at all, that suicide was possibly on the agenda?
He phoned me, he did manage to phone me spontaneously and told me that he was going to take an overdose. They did search him, they strip searched him for paracetamol. But 2 days later, when I begged for him to be put in a more appropriate accommodation and warned them that he would slit his wrist with a razor, nothing was done. It was merely, we have no spaces available, he'll have to stay where he is.
And in relation to his threats to commit suicide, are you aware of any active response by prison officers or the authorities?
They didn't put him on suicide watch. They didn't put him. He actually asked to be put into isolation, mainly so he could breathe, as the accommodation he was in had a radiator on 24 hours and was horrendously claustrophobic.
And was he put into isolation?
Alan requested it numerous times, and again, there is no space, we're full up, was the reply.
So what you're telling us, Tina, is truly shocking. You're saying that as a consequence of coronavirus having hit us all, his conditions deteriorated, he was cut off from you, there were no visits, there were no telephone calls, his accommodation was oppressive, if not cruel, and nothing was done about this.
Nothing was done. Nobody came and spoke to him and said, Alan, we understand that you're just 19 years old. You can't have visits. You can't have a phone in your cell. And he frankly wanted to end it all. The court date was, well, many months in advance. And, you know, he just felt lost and wanted to die.
Your state of mind as all this was unfolding, how stressed out were you about all of this?
Oh, I was totally frustrated. I was passed around on the telephone. I wasn't able to speak to the governor or the deputy governor. I just felt like I was just fobbed off, basically.
Did you think there was a real chance, if he could, that Alan would end his life?
I certainly did. I certainly did. Normally, when Alan says something, he does it. He's quite... he had made the decision that it was best to end his life.
And how has he been over the last few days since being released from prison?
He's very depressed. He's very low. His sleep patterns are all over the place. And I'd say he's in a state of trauma. Terrified of returning. I mean, mainly the thought that Alan will have to go back, God knows how many months, is just so traumatic for him.
Before I turn to Alan himself, can I just ask you this? I believe that you yourself have a highly respectable occupation. Is that right?
Yes, I'm a private secretary for Dublin Property Company.
As a member of the public, looking objectively at the situation, especially during the coronavirus period, how would you describe the way in which Alan as a prisoner, but on remand has been treated?
I think he's been treated appallingly. I think there should have been more contact. The care team, which I believe they have, never visited him. The person he was sharing the cell with was actually a convicted heroin dealer who had mental health issue.
Well, look, you have vividly described the scenario for us, and I'm extremely grateful to you. And so what I'm going to do now is to turn to Alan himself. Alan, you have recently been in custody in a London prison, is that right?
Yeah.
Now, first of all, just tell us a bit about yourself. You're 19 years old. You got yourself into trouble a few months ago.
Yeah.
Had you ever been in trouble before that?
No, never. I don't have any previous.
How was school for you?
It was like, I didn't really get along with too many of the teachers. I'd done all right sometimes, but I ended up leaving like a couple of years early. I got a couple of GCSEs, but like not many after that.
I mean, were there any particular subjects you enjoyed when you were at school?
I found chemistry all right, and I liked PE, sports and that. And then
you got yourself into trouble, and I think you actually found yourself carrying a knife. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Obviously not a good thing to do. Just in a sentence, why were you carrying a knife around with you?
Because I'm kind of just used to people always trying to like trouble me, whether that be like rob me or like try to chase me and stuff like that. People like who just like try to hurt me in general. So.
All right. Well, I don't want to go into the detail, but I think you got into trouble over an incident concerning a knife.
Yes.
And your girlfriend was with you at the time.
Yeah.
Just tell us very briefly about your girlfriend. Is she a long-standing girlfriend?
Yeah. I've been there for a while. At the moment, she's like doing her A-levels and that. She's trying to get into Cambridge University. She's on a waiting list.
After you got into trouble and when you went into prison, did she stand by you?
Yeah, like a lot. She'd always like be sending me letters, be asking for phone calls, like sending me like pictures of like me and her and like my pets and stuff like that.
So that must have been consoling for you anyway. It must have made you feel a bit better when you were in prison.
Yeah, it was a lot better with that.
All right, well, listen, I want to ask you about your experience of prison. You went into prison. How shocking was it for you when you arrived behind bars?
Yeah, probably like the most stressful time like, of my life, to be honest.
So you went to prison, and obviously you were living in a cell. And what was it like being locked up, you know, behind a door?
It was really stressful. Like, so I was always overthinking everything, like, how serious the case was. Like, because obviously it's remand. Like, I think it's way worse being remand than convicted, because you don't actually know like when you're gonna be out. It's just like, so it just plays on your head, and like it's making me like feel like ill in the head and stuff. I was having like nightmares and stuff. I couldn't relax. I couldn't even eat for quite a while. Like,
so tell us a bit more about the conditions. I mean, You're put in a cell. How many people are in a cell with you?
Just one other person.
One person with you. I mean it sounds pretty awful that, you know, you're put in a cell with someone you don't know, yeah?
Yeah.
And do you have any choice over who you get put in a cell with?
No, it's just random. But if you're a young offender, which is 21 and under, they have to link you with another way.
Right.
Because when you try to kind of, even if you do kind of say your mind and try to speak to someone, like they don't really care, like they don't really try to help you. They kind of just shake you off. Like, they claim that there's help there if people need it, but they don't really like go through with it, to be honest. Like,
I mean, that sounds absolutely terrible, especially for a young sort of kid like you. But I mean, you know, if you've had nightmares and you're feeling really low, who would you tell? I mean, would you tell a prison officer, or who is there to tell about the way you feel?
Not really anyone. I guess if you got a cellmate you get along with, like, I guess that's the only other person who really like listen to you like that. If you're getting along with your cellmate, if it's like friend, like obviously you're sharing the same things, so you can talk to them about, but like prison officers, shit like that, like they don't really care, they'll just laugh in your face, to be honest.
Well, hang on, you've just said something which is quite striking. I mean, when you say that prison officers would laugh in your face, do you actually mean that? Did that actually happen to you?
Like not full-on laughing, but, like, they'll kind of just smile in your face and give, like, sarcastic replies and that. But, like, if I'm saying I'm stressed out, they'll just be like, oh, everyone's stressed. Like, it's not a problem, basically. They don't really care about you.
So you must have felt pretty lonely during your time in custody.
Yeah, very. I was basically one of the youngest people there, like, Some people would even say to me, like, oh, like, why are you not in a YA jail and stuff like that? Like, people were proper surprised. People think I look younger than I am as well. So,
were you scared?
Yeah, very.
What were you scared of?
Like, how long I was going to be there, if I'd end up getting into, like, confrontations with people. Like loads of stuff in general to me.
And I mean, obviously it's not nice to be scared any time, but would you say you were scared all of the time?
Yeah, to be honest, I was like stressed out like 24/7. Like, I wasn't really able to like relax at all. Like, I tried to read books and stuff like that, and I tried to take my mind off it, but like it doesn't really work. It's always like at the back of your head.
Well, that's obviously, you know, an incredibly difficult experience for you, whatever you've done or hadn't done. I want to move on though and ask you about the more recent period, because obviously we're all now in the world of coronavirus. Once this virus came about, what happened to you in prison?
Basically they stopped like letting you out at all. Basically, I think I'm pretty sure they're like required to give you like some time out of your cell, like at least like 30 minutes or an hour or something, but like it was literally like 24 hours of refusing to like let anyone out, even for like food. If you had food, they'd like bring it to your cell and stuff, but you weren't even allowed to go out.
Before the coronavirus period, you were out your cell for what, half an hour a day, something like that?
Yeah, you get like 45 minutes association, so that's like 45 minutes to an hour out or so. But then eventually, when it was getting proper serious, they put like these little slips through your door talking about the lockdown and stuff like that, and they were saying our visits will probably be cancelled soon and stuff like that. And yeah, they did end up being cancelled. And then
did you stay in the same cell or were you moved at any stage?
Yeah, I was moved. I've moved cells at least like 5 times, I think. Actually, just before that, I got put in, they just call them the dungeon cells, basically.
And were you given a reason for that?
Not really, to be honest. Like, they just say move. And then, like, I was saying I didn't want to go that wing, because you're allowed to refuse going to wing if you say you have troubles with, like, areas there. And I was saying that's because I was like comfortable in there when I was saying I had issues with people. They were still like, oh, if you don't move, you'll be restrained to move anyway. So
what just one day did they just come and tell you that they were moving you, or what, how did this come about?
Yeah, they're just like pack your stuff, you're going on a different wing. But then I thought it must be all the same and stuff like that, so I kind of just went with it. But that specific cell they put me in, it was like literally making me like so ill.
So first of all, when you were moved, this was at a time when you knew that there was a coronavirus problem, is that right?
Yeah.
So just describe to us this place you were put in over recent days.
So it was like it was obviously like just a white cell, but there was no like cover for the, like most cells have like a cover for the toilet and stuff like that. It was just an outside toilet. You know, the pipe thing was like boiling hot, so the cell got like unnaturally hot. And then there was no windows. There was just vents. I was actually like, I couldn't even breathe properly. I was just making like, you know, when you do loads of mini breaths, so you can like breathe better and stuff like that, because it's just vents. And even behind the vents, the windows were open like the slightest inch, so you get no air.
Just to be absolutely clear, you weren't put in this cell for punishment or because you'd done anything wrong.
It wasn't even a punishment. I think that so should have been a punishment, one for someone on basic or something like that. But I didn't even have any friends or nothing like that. I was on standard.
Were you alone, or were you with someone else in this hellhole?
Yeah, I was with someone else, and he had the same doors as me. He was, if anything, he was taking even worse than me. He was like, he was crying and shit like that, and he's like older than me. He was crying and stuff like that. Couldn't handle it.
Were you still having visits and phone calls, or had these been stopped as a result of the virus?
This was, when I first got put there, this was like 4 days before they actually stopped visits. So I got like one more. But even in that cell, they tried to not let me have that visit. Like, they meant to come to your door and then unlock you for a visit and stuff like that. But they didn't. And then I kept buzzing on the bell saying, yeah, I know I have a visit. And they kept saying, like, oh, you're not on the list. We can't unlock you. And like, I know I was, stuff like that. And I had my visit first. But eventually someone made a call and I got it. But like, I shouldn't really be having to beg, like, to see my family when I've got a visit booked. You know what I mean? Like, they're meant to be telling me. And they don't treat me properly.
How long in the end were you in this underground cell?
I think it was like 9 days.
And the last few days, did you have any visits or phone calls, any contact with the outside world whatsoever?
No, not really, because every time I'd like buzz the emergency bell to like ask to say like, oh, I can't breathe, or I need to make a phone call, and that, like, they would just say, oh, we can't do that. And then you're meant to have a phone in your cell, but like they kept refusing to give it me. Like, it's lazy. They don't try to help you whatsoever. Like,
so just before we move on finally to talk about, you know, how you are now, in relation to being locked up in this cell, what was your state of mind? Just try and paint the picture for us of what was going through your mind with the pipes, the heat, the lack of ventilation, the lack of visits, the lack of phone calls, being cut off from the world, a virus floating around. What was your state of mind?
No, I was just like, it was probably like the most stressed out I've ever been. Like, I couldn't like relax or one. I wanted to like just, I wanted to like lose it at someone or something like that. I was like, I just felt proper ill. I was even like, kept banging on the door and buzzing the bell, telling them like every 2 seconds that, like, I physically can't breathe. I've got like asthma and asphyxiation problems. Like, I physically can't breathe in the cell. Like, I was even at one point, I was like, I was even gonna do something to myself or do something to like a guard just so they'd put me in a segregation thing. That's a punishment.
I mean,
like, the segregation had better conditions than the cell I was in. I would have rather went there. It wasn't dealt with at all. I try to ask them to like do something about it every single time. Then, like, say just before the full on lockdown, I was trying to go downstairs to the nurse and ask if at least they can recommend the doctors to like try to help me with it and stuff, but like there's only so much the nurse could do. I was asking every guard, like, oh, like, I can't breathe properly, and they're just saying like, oh, like there's no space. I kept asking them as well, and they were trying to like get onto me about like pestering them basically, but like if they were in them conditions, they would do the exact same. I was actually having trouble breathing.
Did you want to kill yourself?
Yeah, to be honest, yeah.
I mean, were you able? Could you have done it if you'd wanted to? I mean, you're in a cell. There's not much in the cell. Would it have been possible for you to kill yourself?
Like, technically, I was gonna do like, at one point, like, I was gonna like snap a razor and make a blade and just start cutting up my arms, so they had to take me hospital, innit? Because in the hospital, I'd like, at least they do something there, because in the hospital, I could have asked them, like, oh, I could have told the people there and they'd probably like try help or something, and I'd get like, and obviously it wouldn't be like boiling hot, I'd breathe properly. So I was like, I was considering doing that, basically.
I mean, I just want to ask you, Alan, you got bail eventually. On the day that you got bail, did they just come and open your door and tell you you were being released or what?
My aunt told me, sent a letter saying something about we're applying for bail, and I didn't tried to get it, but yeah, eventually they just opened the door and they said immediate release.
And how did you feel at that moment? Just try and describe your feelings at that moment in time.
I was so happy to be getting to go home. Obviously, it'd be nicer if I knew the whole case was over, case dismissed, and I was going home. But I wasn't thinking. I was just so happy to be just out of that cell, literally.
Did the guy you were sharing a cell with, was he there when the door was opened and you were told immediate release?
Yeah, he was actually.
And what were your feelings towards him leaving him behind, stuck in that cell? Did you feel anything for him?
Yeah, I felt bad for him. I was telling him, keep your chin up and don't use the plot in there. I try to keep telling them to mute you, blah, blah, blah. And I just gave him, because I had some, canteen and food left and drink. And obviously, I'm going home, so I just left him, my food and stuff.
Obviously, you've painted a pretty worrying picture for us all. Whatever you'd done or hadn't done, you were on remand. You're now back living with your aunt. I mean, yeah. How do you feel now, a few days after being let out of that cell and that prison?
It feels proper, unreal to be home, to be honest. It's even walking out the gates, it's proper weird feeling. It's like you're in some dream or something like that. It's weird, but it's so relaxing to be back having a normal bed to sleep on, not boiling hot. It's literally a nice cool room, so way more relaxed.
How are you dealing with the situation? I mean, do you feel relieved? Do you feel bitter and angry? I mean, what's your feelings at the moment?
I'm obviously really appreciative to be back here and stuff like that, but as well I'm proper paranoid about the upcoming trial, because the thing I'm here for, obviously people can get quite a significant amount of time for. If I get a bad result, I know for a fact I won't be able to handle it in there again, literally. More than some tiny amount that I physically won't be able to handle, especially that place.
You've described your prison experience to us. You obviously understand that we have to have prisons and that sometimes people...
Yeah, of course. Yeah, obviously prison's a punishment, obviously. It's meant to teach people a lesson, but I don't think they should completely give you no rights whatsoever, and I don't think they should make people have inhumane conditions, because they're meant to be rehabilitating people. It's not gonna do that. It's just gonna send them. It's gonna send them just sick in the head, and just make them worse when they come out.
All right, Alan. Well, listen, you've explained it as clearly as you can, and you're now back with your aunt. So
yeah.
I hope that you're able to deal with the experience that you've had, and
thank you.
I want to thank you for giving up your time and for painting the picture for us.
No problem.
Thank you very much indeed. Take care.
You too. Have a good day.
Throughout this podcast, all names have been changed for safety and legal reasons. Thank you for listening. Join me again next time for another episode of Justice on Trial. Please don't forget to subscribe. And if you liked what you heard, please give us a good review. And if you have a story you feel is worth sharing, please get in touch by tweeting us at justice_ontrial.